Can you just tell us what to do?
Easier said than done. See, Jesus, or even Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, didn't write us a nice yellow covered book, Salvation for Dummies. The parable we have today has been described by the famous New Testament scholar Rudolf Holtmann as insoluble. And it's a parable, as I mentioned last week, parables are supposed to mess with your mind, throw a couple of contradictory ideas alongside each other so that we see things differently. Well, this week is certainly seeing things differently. Maybe. Actually, the biggest danger with this parable is that it will start casting it like a plate, flattening it out into a two-dimensional story. Maybe God is the rich owner, Jesus serves as the shrewd manager, playing fast and loose with the rules in order to get the debtors on his side, and us maybe as the debtors, or maybe as the observers, applauding the hero and booing the rich guy's primeval flesh really and villain. Oh, wait. That doesn't work. Okay, maybe you're the shrewd manager commended for moral cheating by Jesus, the rich owner. I really don't think Jesus is suggesting that ethics don't matter, or that financial misconduct is okay when it's for a good reason. But it's just so complicated. Perhaps it's complicated in part because it's talking about money. We don't talk about money much in church. We talk about money when we're working on a pledge drive, or when we're talking about giving to Samaritan Center or something, or when we don't have enough to pay the church bills or fix the church roof. We don't ever talk about the meaning money carries in our culture and what that means for us as Christians. After all, one of the first questions that come up when you meet somebody new: what do you do? Where do you live? What do you drive? Or maybe if you're from some parts of the country, who are your people? We identify people by occupation, and therefore by what they probably make, by location and what their homes probably were, by their car, and by who they are connected to. Do they come from money, prominent family, presumably well-off? In fact, we may not have stone or bronze idols in the town square to the god of wealth named them, but we do give extraordinary attention to wealth and its trappings. Not that we're so practiced as to ask how much you make, but we would really just love to know. Money's such a private thing in our society that people will usually be willing to talk about their sex life before they'll talk about their finances. The latter is seen as nobody's business, private even from close friends and family. Our parable today is difficult for us, in part because it's set in a cultural world that we don't inhabit. A world where, in the book of Acts, a couple was struck dead for lying about how much money they made selling some property. See, they held some back and only gave most of it to the church. And no one in that very early church community thought there was any defense for that kind of privacy. This world of our parable is a world where doing favors for others causes them to be indebted to you. And people took that very, very seriously. It was a matter of honor, and honor was more important than money. For the master in our parable, having a manager who didn't manage well, reflected badly on his honor and on his status in the community. Gossip about having a wayward manager. The master needs to save face, so he plans to fire the manager. And the manager, well, he's squandered his master's money. And he's in a bad situation. He's going to lose his job and he won't get another one. And he develops a plan to get himself out of trouble. He forgives a portion of the debt that he manages. And people would, of course, assume that this was done on the master's orders. So the master looks great, because he's so benevolent and charitable and all those good things. And never mind that silly gossip we heard about his not being able to control his employees.
That's good.
Because he made the mountain stone look great, and he spirited the royals away. So everybody wins.
Actually, nobody in our parable is paramount of virtue. Everyone is in it for themselves. So why does Jesus tell us this parable about these less than admirable folks? Well, it seems this is one of these times when Jesus is using the really least likely people to illustrate his points. Like, immediately before our passage today, he uses a story of a well-known selfish kid and a father who's spoiled him rotten to illustrate the never-ending lengths that a prodigal God will go to. Even though the kid's motives are mixed, he tries to make up for what he's done. He comes home and he has his rollicking speech already. Oh, there are no more worthy to be called your son. This time, it's the guy who squandered the boss's money. And now the word squandered is used here and in the prodigal son parable and nowhere else in Luke's gospel. So this guy who squandered money suddenly is very, very creative about how to ensure his own future. Perhaps a takeaway from this parable of the shrewd manager is that if even such a selfish, money-motivated lowlife as this manager can be creative and shrewd with dishonest wealth in order to make up for his wrongdoings, how much more creative and shrewd might Jesus' followers be? He says, if then you have not been faithful with dishonest wealth, who will entrust to you true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? How we handle the morally difficult situations that have no really clear, good answers reveals our character far more than when the line between right and wrong is perfectly clear. The world we live in, the same world Jesus lived in, the same world Jesus came to reconcile to God, creative and good and shrewd ways to bring good out of, if not evil, then